Boker Tov. Today's topic is tzitzis transplants. And the question, I guess, to start off with is, why would somebody want to perform a tzitzis transplant? Because
he has very good tzitzis, right? But the beged is worn and torn, so he wants to use the same tzitzis on another beged.
Okay, so the tzitzis are in excellent condition. The garment is not in such good condition, so it would be a shame to just dispose of the tzitzis. So let's recycle, let's reuse the tzitzis, we'll transplant it onto a new, fresh beged. What about the opposite case? What other cases might a person want to perform a tzitzis transplant in? And aside from being motivated by the motivation to preserve and to recycle the tzitzis, right, why else might somebody perform a tzitzis transplant?
The quality of the tzitzis.
He can't afford to buy new ones. So again, even if the tzitzis are not necessarily the best quality, but you might want, you know, if you're changing over from, you know, your winter beged to your summer beged or vice versa, so you might want to instead of having to buy two sets of strings, you can buy one set of string and just put it onto whichever beged you happen to be wearing.
Roof needs a bit larger beged.
Right, you need to change begadim. You only have one set of strings, so you'll change them perhaps from one beged to another. You know, it's very interesting. Like when I first thought of tzitzis transplants, I wasn't thinking along those lines at all. I was thinking like in terms of heart transplants or liver transplants, that you want to transplant an organ, right, when the organ needs to be replaced. So then you take out an organ from somebody who can spare it, and you put it into the person, you know, who's missing the organ. And so I was thinking from the totally opposite direction, not in terms of let's recycle this perfectly good set of strings, but rather the beged that I want to wear, its tzitzis are failing. Something went wrong with its tzitzis, and so I need to transplant tzitzis from a healthy beged into this beged in order to salvage the beged so that it can still be wearable. Again, the two perspectives are not mutually exclusive. But that's basically going to be the binding topic for today, that is tzitzis transplants. And hopefully we're going to discuss, among other questions, when is a tzitzis transplant going to be ineffective? You can be guaranteed it's not going to work to begin with. When is it likely to be effective? When is it recommended? When is it not recommended? Under what, you know, what's the procedure for performing a tzitzis transplant? In what ways can a tzitzis transplant go wrong? And so that's really going to be the binding glue of the topic that we're going to discuss today. Right, however, as with many instances of the Gemara, the Meiri emphasizes this time and time again. The Gemara follows a very interesting train of thought. It's very associative, and so it's not going to be laser-focused on the topic of tzitzis transplants, and there may be times when we'll have to hold in our mind for a couple of lines, you know, that somehow the Gemara is going to bring it back to tzitzis transplants before we actually get the closure and we see why the Gemara is invoking one braisa or another braisa in connection with this topic. And, yes?
Two, if you had eight tzitzis, there's four coming down and four coming down, and two Torah, and he wants to replace them. So you can take the tzitzis off the eight and replace it with new tzitzis. Is that called true tzitzis transplant?
Well, if the new tzitzis are coming from a tzitzis package in the store, that's not a tzitzis transplant in the same sense. But if you're taking it from an old beged and you're putting it on to this beged, so then that's what I would call a tzitzis transplant.
Oh, even from this beged, yes.
I mean, you have two pairs on this beged.
You have one pair on it, on one of them, two of the strings tore. So now you're allowed to have a little bit, right? So you're allowed to take.
It's like the spare button, right? Yeah, so you take off the spare button and you'll put it, that would seem to be a case of where a tzitzis transplant would be valid. And so the Gemara begins the discussion by talking what happens if there's a rip, if there's a tear in the talus. Yes?
When you say transplant, you mean not a tzitzis, you're transplanting the whole, you're not taking just more strings.
You are, right, you're taking, well, so the language of the Gemara, by the way, this is important, is matirim mi beged li beged. Right, that means untying, right, to be matir means to untie something, like on Shabbos, kosher means to tie a knot, and matir, which is the opposite of kosher, means to untie a knot. So matirim literally means untying, mi beged, from one garment, li beged, to another garment. And so that's how the Gemara conceives of this transplant. It does not, it'll tell you very explicitly, that if you just kind of chop off, right, the tzitzis intact and try to transplant it, that is a guaranteed failed transplant. There's no way that it's going to be kosher if you take the loops intact and transplant it to another garment. And however, if you untie all of the knots and all of the loops and then you retie them, which I should tell you is much harder than retying a set of strings that was never knotted, but if you were to do that, so that is a type of tzitzis transplant that we're discussing, matirim, untying from one baguette in order to retie it on another baguette.
Just basically, I'll say something about that. My matirim, the one Shabbos with the three things.
Yes, it's not Beis Hillel, but the Gemara Menachos quotes the three things. We'll see it on Amud Beis and Mirtz Hashem in a few minutes. But excellent memory, right? It appears in Bamem Adlikin as well, and some of the most important sources in Rishonim for this topic are actually in the second parak of Masechah Shabbos, because most of the sugya is repeated in that parak.
If you see one where your father sits as a minister, let's just say that the garment was very bad shape.
All right, so let's read onwards. We'll discuss when a tzitzis is trans. Yeah, so we'll discuss when it's called for. So the Gemara tells us, let's say that the garment got ripped. The garment got ripped, and now there's two different types of tears, of rips that can apply in a garment. One of them, right, is as follows. Let's say I've got the corner of the garment like this, and you can even see that this actually is a little bit ripped. I don't know if I can show it to you close up, but you can see there's a little hemming in the circle which the tzitzis is inserted through. If you take out your own tzitzis and take a look, it's very likely that you'll see that there's a little bit of thread that's sewn up around the whole of the tzitzis in order to prevent just such a ripping. But sometimes a talus or a talus katan gets a little bit old and the hem begins to rip a little bit, and so you can see that this hole is enlarged. It's not a perfect circle, it's a little bit of an oval right now, because over the years, you know, because of the pulling of folding it and unfolding it and wearing it and kissing it and everything else, that this circle got a little bit ripped, and now it's like an oval, so it's a little bit ripped. And that's one type of a tear that might exist in a baguette, which one might have the inclination to repair. This is not such a serious tear that it warrants a transplant. All you need is a little bit of stitching, right, and you could theoretically fix it up, but it could be that you're not allowed to stitch it up. So we'll get to that in just a second. The second type of tear is a tear that doesn't appear in the middle of the garment, but rather it's a tear that begins at the edge of the garment. In other words, that it's a tear that starts from the outside, right, and goes inwards. And once again, right, if that tear is not too large, then it's not going to necessarily impact the tzitzis, right? But you may be worried that if the tear is there, then it may get bigger and bigger and eventually jeopardize the tzitzis. And so you might have an inclination to sew up, to stitch up that tear. And so the Gemara is going to be dealing with one or the other of these types of tears. So let's see what the Gemara says. Eight lines from the bottom. Amar Rachba, Amar of Yehuda. Thank you very much, Rav Shlomo. We'll keep the talus here. I may need it again. Thank you very much. Mem Aleph, Amar Aleph, eight lines from the bottom. I'll make a bracha while everyone finds a place. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, shehakol nihyeh bidvaro. Oh, okay, so in those who are using the Gemara that has really old-looking print, that it will be six lines from the bottom. Okay, thank you.
The blue Gemara.
Amar Rachba, Amar Rav Yehuda. Talis. You've got a talis. Shenikra, that was torn. Chutz l'shalosh, outside of three tfachim. So, three etzbaot. I'm sorry, I keep on getting this wrong. Three etzbaot. So the talis tears outside of three etzbaot. What does this mean? So, let's just say for a moment that if you measure three etzbaot, right, from the corner of the talus, I don't know whether we're measuring the hypotenuse or whether we're measuring the right angle. Let's say it's the right angle for a second. So you've got, you know, your three etzba'ot, right, from the corner of the talus. If there's a tear that's more than three etzba'ot inwards, right, from the edge of the talus, so then, and it's a tear that's in the middle, right, of the talus, the halacha is, says the Braith, says Rachba, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, Yitpar, you're allowed to sew it up, you're allowed to stitch it up. That is a type of tear that can be mended with simple stitching. Right, that's one interpretation. You've got a hole in the middle of the talus. You want to mend it. You should measure from the edge. If it's more than three etzba'ot from the edge, so then you're allowed to mend it. If it is less than three etzba'ot from the edge, we'll see in a second, it's a machlokes, whether you are allowed to mend it. Let's imagine the second type of tear for a second. You're talking about a tear.
Doesn't it just have to be within three etzba'ot from the edge?
Exactly. That's
the key.
You're right.
So how would you have a hole? What...
Just like this. It's ripped.
Right.
Right. It's ripped over here. And you want to now fix it up so that the rip does not become enlarged. Right. And
but how could it be more than three etzba'ot from the edge?
Let's say that you have something that's like your talus katan,
right,
which has a big hole in the middle for your neck.
Right.
And that hole gets a little bit bigger. You want to sew it up so that it doesn't get even bigger yet. So you're allowed to sew it up because that's a tear that's more than three etzba'ot from the outer edge of the garment. But if it's too close to the edge of the garment, so then we'll see it's not clear that you're allowed to sew it up. If the hole is here, right, here in the middle of the garment, right, so then you're allowed to sew it up, no problem at all.
Okay.
Right? But if the hole is too close to the edge, so then there could potentially be a problem with sewing it up, and we'll discover what the problem is in a second. Now the second type of rip we discussed is the type of rip that appears, right, starting from the outside of the garment and going inwards. And that way we're going to measure it, not three etzba'ot, right, from the edge of the garment, but rather we'll measure it either three etzba'ot from this edge of the garment. So you can talk about a rip that is over here. A rip that's over here is more than three etzba'ot from the width or the length of the garment, so that you would definitely be allowed to sew up. Right? Again, a rip that's over here, right, is again more than three etzba'ot from the edge of the garment, right, counting from the width, and so you would be allowed to sew it up. But if the rip, if the tear was somewhere over here within three etzba'ot, right, of this edge, or if it was over here, right, somewhere within three etzba'ot of this edge, so then it could potentially be a problem. So those are the two different types of rips that we're discussing. Either a central rip, right, which when we're measuring it from the outside, or a rip that begins on the outside, in which case we're measuring from either the width or the length of the talus. It needs to be more than three etzba'ot away in order for there to be unanimous consent for your permission to stitch it up. So that's what Rachba says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. If it is chutz l'shalosh etzba'ot, if it's outside of this three etzba range, so then yitpar, you're allowed to stitch it, you're allowed to be tofer, you're allowed to sew it up.
In excess, that's mean in excess. Chutz means in excess.
In the outside, there's a range. Whenever you see a talus,
starts,
right,
at the beginning,
right? So again, you're either counting this
way,
three square etzba'ot over here, three square etzba'ot from the edge.
Well, square is not, you mean the length of the rib.
Right, for Rashi, there's a square which is three etzba'ot by three etzba'ot. If a tear happens within that square, you can't fix it.
Within that square.
Within that square, you cannot fix it. Outside of that square, you could fix it.
Where did the rip start then? Outside the square?
It's a central rip. The rip is in the... There's
like you had a circle over here.
Right, so imagine if I had a hole over here, Rashi would say I can't fix it up. If I had a hole over here, I could fix it up. Because this is more than three etzba'os. It's outside of that three etzba by three etzba square. Imagine the square is over here. The rip is here. It's
where
fine.
Where would a rip have begun?
It begins in the middle, like a hole.
It started right there.
Yeah, it started it's a hole. Call it a hole, not a rip.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, and then the other...
The hole, I can understand.
Yes.
The rip is...
Yeah, okay. So we'll call it the hole and the rip. Right. Is everyone still with me here? Okay, you can either have a hole in the middle of the talus if it's outside of the three square etzba square, so then you can mend it. If it's within that three etzba square, so then you cannot mend it. And if you've got a rip that begins at the outside of the talus, if it's within, right, that three etzba line from the end, so then you cannot mend it. If it's outside of the three etzba line from the end, so then you may mend it. So that is Rachba in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara continues and says, Toch shalosh, if the hole or the rip is within three etzba'os, then lo yitpar, you're not supposed to stitch it up, you're not supposed to mend it. And a brisa says the same thing. Tanya nam yahachi, a brisa says, talis shenikra chutz l'shalosh, a talis which is torn, ripped, whole, right? Toch chutz l'shalosh, outside of this three etzba square, or the three etzba line, yitpar, you're allowed to sew it up. But if it's toch shalosh, if it's within the three etzba square, or with before the three etzba line, Rabbi Meir says, lo yitpar, you're not allowed to sew it up. Right, that's how we paskin. And the Chachamim say, yitpar, that you are allowed to sew it up. So let's just work on for a second. There's two explanations for why this might be so. What's the problem with mending a hole, which is with a hole, keep in mind the hole that begins in the center, that is within that three etzba square at the corner of the talis? Rashi says that the concern is that you may... Let's say the tzitzis are already there. Right? We've got a talus like this. The tzitzis are already inside of it. Right? But so we're not going to have a concern of tasa velomina asoi. The next, right, the other opinion talks about tasa velomina asoi.
So pulling the hole, though, around the fringes.
You're mending the hole around the fringes. So that's very interesting. You're saying that even mending the hole around the fringes could be a problem of tasa velo min ha'asoi. I'll tell you why I think that may not work. Because the talus remains kosher. Even if there's a little rip over here, right, where the tzitzis are, the talus was kosher before, it's kosher now, and it's going to be kosher afterwards. And so the mending of the rip is not really doing anything per se, right, to the talus. Right, but if somehow tear rendered the talus non-kosher, so that would genuinely be a problem of tasa velo mina asoi to mend it, exactly. And that's going to be the explanation, right, for the tear. Right, the tear, those who say, right, those who talk about the tear will invoke tasa velo mina asoi to explain why it's invalid. But Rashi says a little bit of a different interpretation. Rashi says, Baruch haba. Rashi says that the concern is... Rashi says that the concern is that as you're mending it, you may leave some loose strings. You'll leave some loose strings, and then you'll use those loose strings to form, if anything should ever happen to these tzitzis, you'll use those loose strings as the base for a new set of tzitzis. And that would pose a problem of... Right, of tasa velomina asi, because you're using, right, a string which was just part of, right, part of the edge of the garment. You're not putting in something that was specially manufactured for the purpose of tzitzis. So it's not classical tasa velomina asi. The that is an excellent question, and it speaks to an issue that Mr. Amster raised 2 weeks ago. And that is, right, how does halacha respond, right, to changing sociological trends, if you will? It used to be that when people were to repair their garments, so they repaired it, right, let's say you're talking about a woolen garment, they would repair it with a woolen thread, they would take a big piece of thread and stitch it through, and then there would be a bunch of thread left over, and that would genuinely resemble a tzitzis thread. Nowadays, the reason that you're troubled is that we don't do anything remotely similar to that nowadays. Nowadays, even a woolen garment, this is what all the poskim say, I did not have a chance to consult my local tailor, right? But the poskim will say that nowadays, or at least back in their time, that even woolen garments were not repaired with wool threads. They were repaired with threads of other materials, of canvas and other things like that, hemp.
Cotton.
Yeah, canvas though I don't think is cotton, right? The cotton is called semer geffen in Hebrew. Whatever it is, they don't repair it with wool thread. And not only that, they don't repair it with these long threads. And therefore, right, the poskim, including the Shulchan Aruch, right, then nowadays we don't have this concern of Rashi anymore. So it used to be that if there was a hole that was within this three etzba square, so there was a genuine concern that the thread they used to repair the hole would be used as the base right, of the next set of strings, of tzitzis strings that you put in, which would invalidate the tzitzis. The post can say nowadays this is no longer such a concern because of the way, the method that we use to repair damaged garments, and therefore, under extenuating circumstances, they say that since the reason is no longer applicable, therefore the gzeira that Rashi is concerned about is also no longer applicable. So under extenuating circumstances, if a person had tzitzis that was ripped like this, and they wanted to repair the tzitzis, so we would say that the tzitzis remains kosher. We don't say that the gzeira, the rabbanon, of concern, lest maybe you'll use the repair thread as the base of a new set of tzitzis strings, we don't say that that gzeira invalidates the tzitzis nowadays, because that concern is no longer as relevant nowadays as it once was. Yes?
That being the case, when you have a scenario of when you have to repair tzitzis, and like you have the strings out, and would it be okay to use additional layers on the corner, like on top of the basic, acceptable ones to let them reinforce them to.
Excellent question. Excellent question. You're leading me into my next point. Right? If you were to pull out your tzitzis and examine them, or take out your talus tomorrow morning and examine it, you will most likely discover that there is a little stitching around the hole where the tzitzis are inserted. Mm-hmm. Now, in the times of the Gemara, Rashi would say that stitching would invalidate your talus. Because... on what basis? On the basis of this concern. You have a garment, the garment has a hole in it. If you're going to go stitch up the hole, right, even if it's for the purposes of reinforcing it, we have to be concerned that maybe the thread that you're using to reinforce the hole, that maybe you'll use it as the base for the tzitzis strings.
What if you don't?
If you don't, so then Baruch Hashem, God saved you from wearing non-kosher tzitzis. But Rashi says that everyone has to avoid this, because maybe somebody is not going to have the seichel, right, and they're going to use that thread as a basis, right, for tzitzis strings. Keep in mind, right, back then you couldn't just go to the Sfarim store and buy a pair of tzitzis that has a label on it from the badatz. Back then, probably tzitzis were manufactured at home, just like most begadim were manufactured at home, and the laws and the instructions for manufacturing and assembling tzitzis needed to be the type of instructions that everyone could follow. It's got to be the type of instructions that come together with your printer or with your food processor or whatever it is, the type of thing, right, that, before they had those, help lines that you could call up and say, can you explain to me? It really had to be something that everyone could follow without any concern for assembling it the wrong way, and that may inform, right, some of what seemed like excessive gzeros when it comes to the manufacture of tzitzis. Yes?
I had something else in mind when I asked my question.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from the fact that we don't use them anymore, the tzitzis, I may be wrong, don't we have a requirement that tzitzis have to be woven simple threads together? They have to be thick. So whenever, even if people used wool thread to sew, a single thread is thin. Tzitzis are kofel shmona. I don't know what they are, but they're thicker. So I don't see how you could confuse a thread with a tzitzis, which is composed of several threads woven and wound together. It's much, much thicker. That's my question.
Mm-hmm. I think that my feeling is that it's the same answer that I gave to Alvin just now, meaning that the guide for assembling tzitzis needs to be like foolproof. It needs to be that no one's going to make an error. And so conceivably there may be times and places where the threads were thicker, where the tzitzis threads were not as thick. I mean, even nowadays we have the chutim gasim and the chutim dakim. And so if you've got a chut which is dak, and the garment is woven out of something that's a little bit more, and so then you may end up with a circumstance where people get confused. So Rashi would tell you that this little hemming that we do around the circle would disqualify the beged, because there's it runs afoul of this gzera, lest somebody use it as the base for a set of strings. The fact that we do have the hemming to prevent the talisos from tearing seems to be a nod, right, to Mr. Amster's point that at least in this instance, right, we have a firm tradition that the gzera was only enforced when the concern that it was meant to address was applicable. Nowadays, that the concern is not applicable because there's a vast realm of difference between the threads that we use for tzitzis and the threads that we use for mending our garments. Therefore, that gives us the permission to sew that little hem around the garment. Now, coming back to Alvin's other point, that was all about a hole. What about a rip? What about a tear? What about something that begins from the outside? What would the concern be over there? So the Tosfos and the other Rishonim point out that over there the concern is that the tear would invalidate the garment. So we talked about this a little bit 2 weeks ago. Let's say that the tear goes from the outside of the garment all the way to the tzitzis hole. And what that does is it makes the garment lose its four-cornered status. It becomes a garment with only three quarters and tatters in place of the fourth corner. If that's the case, now again, I don't understand 100% why tatters don't count as a corner. Right? For me, if you cut the garment like this, then it just has five corners. But the Rishonim all seem to understand that somehow, if you make a cut, meaning it could be that that a cut like this maybe will make the corner improper, a cut like this, a circular cut. Somehow they understand that a tatter doesn't count as a corner. A shmata, it doesn't count as a corner. And therefore, their concern as follows. If you have a tear from the outside of the garment all the way to the tzitzis hole, that will invalidate the tzitzis. It'll make it into a three-cornered garment. Once it's a three-cornered garment, so all of the tzitzis that are already on the garment, right, become, right, pre-fabricated because they were on the garment prior to the garment being obligated in tzitzis. So now, Rabbi Hananel says, do not, under any circumstances, repair this talis, right, because that's gonna render it
possible.
So the only possible thing that you can do is untie, right, the other three sets of strings, untie the fourth set of string, then mend the talis, and then reaffix all four sets of strings, and even there, the post can dispute, right, do we allow people to do that? Or are we concerned that if we allow that to happen, that people might just say, forget about the undoing and the redoing, and then they'll wear non-kosher tzitzis. And so in general, what we say is, if there's a big hole, generally try not to mend it. If you did mend it post facto, right, there are grounds for being machshir it because the concern is no longer as strong as it once was nowadays. That's when it comes to a hole. And when it comes to a tear, so that is a genuine d'oraisa concern. It's not just we're worried that someone may do something. It's a genuine tasav elomina also. If you reduce one corner to tatters, to shmatas, to rags, it ceases to be a corner, which invalidates all of the tzitzis that remain on the garment, and then that type of garment should be disposed of the way that we dispose of tzitzis, which we'll talk about in the second shir. So this is the beginning, and we're not even up to the serious, you know, transplant issue here. Right now we're just discussing about when and how to stitch up the talus. The next line suddenly brings it to a more serious injury where we'll actually get involved in transplanting. Says the Gemara, Vishavin, everyone agrees, whether you think that you're allowed to sew up within three etzpos of the corner, whether you think you're not allowed to sew up within three etzpos of the corner, everyone agrees, Shelo yavi afilu amal ama, you shouldn't bring even a square ama, which is a big chunk, so you might think that the bigger the chunk, the more permissible it is, right, to bring. We talked about this last week, that if it's bigger, so then it's chayav in tzitzis. So you're bringing a chunk which was chayev in tzitzis, and therefore the tzitzis that are affixed, that are attached to that big chunk, right, were never prefabricated. When they were initially made, they were on a garment that was chayev in tzitzis. Now you're taking this big chunk, an amma by an amma, and the amma by amma remains chayev in tzitzis. And you're putting them on a new garment, and so the tzitzis remained on a piece of fabric that was chayev in tzitzis throughout. Nonetheless, says the Gemara, it is possible shelo yav yafilu ama ama mimakom acher, do not bring even a square ama from another place. Uba techeles, and on that square ama you've got the tzitzis strings. Betola ba, and place it onto this garment, right, which is beginning to fray, which is beginning to wear away, where the whole of the tzitzis is it's torn or ripped. Don't do that. The Nimuke Yosef we saw explained, because even though that square Amma was chayiv and tzitzis the whole time, there still is a psul of tase, right, velo min ha'asoy, right, because you didn't have all four corners as a single quartet. They did not exist as a quartet prior to the manufacture of the tzitzis. So even though taking each corner separately, the corners existed before the tzitzis were assembled, but taken together as a quartet, you did not have this quartet of corners prior to the manufacture of tzitzis, and therefore, said the Nimuke Yosef, this would pose a problem of taaseh velo min ha'asoy. The pasuk says, al arba kanfos kisuscha asher techaseba. First you have a quartet of corners, and then you affix the tzitzis to that quartet. If you had, instead of a quartet, you had a group of three corners and one corner, and you affix the tzitzis, and then you brought them all together, so that would be a problem of taaseh velo min ha'asoy. You don't have the arba kanfos kisuscha, the four corners, the quartet of corners, prior to the manufacture, the assembly of the tzitzis. And furthermore, says the Gemara, and so by the way, that's your first case of a tzitzis transplant, which would be invalid. Right? So you cannot transplant this amma by amma, right, onto a beged that has three corners and a tatter, or even onto a beged that's got four corners, just that one of the corners are frayed, because it would pose a problem of tasa velomina asli, that tzitzis were assembled prior to the existence of these four corners as a quartet. Vishavin, says the Gemara, shemevi techeles mimakom acher, that you're allowed to bring just the strings from someplace else, v'tole ba, and you're allowed to then tie, hang the strings from this talis. So in other words, you're not bringing a big piece of fabric pre-hung with tzitzis and stitching that fabric onto your talis, but rather what you're doing is you're untying tzitzis from an old garment and you're retying the tzitzis onto a new garment. But bilvad shelo tehei mufsekes, the tzitzis cannot be cut. They cannot be short of the size, like a pasuk. Literally a pasuk means something that's chopped off, because a pasuk is you're chopping a paragraph into individual little pieces. And you can talk about that. That's in general what the word a hefsek, right? La hefsek means to stop something. That exactly. So the word pasuk always indicates cutting something short or cutting something into smaller pieces. And so bilvad shelo tehei mufsekes, that these strings, which you're untying from a previous garment and retying onto a new garment, should not be cut short. They should be the proper size. Right? And for those of you who remember way back to a month ago, does who remembers what the word gardumin means? Gardumin, right? It means a cut-off string. And what it meant was, is that let's say that you have a pair of tzitzis which are manufactured and they're kosher, and then somebody chops off all of the loose strings, or maybe even more than the loose strings, until all that's left is a little stub. Does anyone remember what the halacha is? How long, right, does the stub need to be in order, right, for the tzitzis to be kosher under certain circumstances? It needs to be long enough that you can make a slip knot out of the thread. So here's the question. You had a set of strings, and they turned into gardumin. And now you want to untie them from the old talis and retie them on the new talis. So we know that gardumin milechatchila, to put strings that are too short lechatchila, are a problem. Once the strings are already on, right, so then they're possessed of their kedusha, and the Chazon Ish explained that it's harder to take away kedusha than it is to prevent kedusha from coming. So in our case, it's a little bit in between. On the one hand, these strings already received their kedusha when they were tied on to the first garment, right? But on the other hand, perhaps by untying them, you dispel the kedusha. And then when you tie them onto the new garment, you need to totally reinvigorate them with kedusha, in which case you would need them to be full length. Or perhaps we say no, that once these strings became possessed of Kedusha, the Kedusha never fully leaves them, even if they are untied, and therefore we'll treat them as gardumin, we'll treat them as being kosher, even though you untied them and retied them. So that's the suffix, the uncertainty, which the Gemara is coming to address. The Gemara says once you untie a set of tzitzit strings from the garment on which they're affixed, that dispels all of their Kedusha. And hence, when you're taking strings that were too small, they got cut off on the original garment, so that yes, the fact that they were all tied together, that sort of kept the Kedusha inside of them. But once you untie them, the Kedusha went away, and if you're going to put them now onto a new garment, they've got to be the right size. They're not kosher to affix anew onto a new garment. Bilvad, shelo tehei mufsekes, you can't use strings that became gardumin, that got cut on the original garment. You cannot untie those type of strings and put them onto a new garment because the strings are not long enough to receive a new infusion of Kedusha. So the Gemara now draws the critical inference, which tzitzis transplants, the Gemara says, Shema mina, we can hear from this, we can infer from this, that matirin mi beged, the beged, that it's permissible to untie tzitzis from one beged and to retie them onto a new beged. Otherwise, why is the Gemara saying that everyone agrees that you're allowed to untie from one beged and to retie onto the new beged as long as the strings are the right size, right? If somebody argued, if someone felt that it was not permissible to perform this type of a tzitzis transplant, so then that opinion should have been mentioned in the Braisa. The unanimity of this Braisa seems to suggest that matirin mi beged le beged. And the Gemara answers, no, three words, dilma, maybe. The Braisa is talking, e balai. If the beged, the initial beged, got worn out, right, which is much closer to the line of thought that you guys were pursuing at the beginning of the shiur, that you're doing the transplant not so much, right, in order to save the faltering beged, that you know, you've got the tzitzis and you want to keep the beged, but the tzitzis are getting, you know, they're getting old, and so you want to put a new pair of tzitzis on, but rather you're doing it to recycle, right, a beautiful pair of strings from a garment that's becoming frayed. Under those circumstances, everyone agrees that matirin mi beged le beged, that you're allowed to perform the transplant. The only time that you cannot do a tzitzis transplant is when the donor beged is still perfectly healthy. So then we're not going to say take tzitzis from a perfectly healthy beged and put them onto a new beged. But if the donor beged is already, you know, is already comatose, So then perhaps it will be permissible, right, to put the tzitzis from that comatose beged, the one that's going to be, you know, shortly put into the beged, you know, disposal bin, and to take the tzitzis off of it and put them onto a new beged. There would be unanimous consent that the transplant is permissible. Okay, excellent. So that really gets into the reasons that are behind this problem. Meaning, what could possibly be problematic about a tzitzis transplant? Right, what could be the problem? We'll encounter in a second. There is a machlokes about whether tzitzis transplants are permitted from a healthy beged, right, onto another beged. And so what would be the problem, right, at least in the case of a healthy beged, of taking the tzitzis off the beged and putting them on to a new beged? What could possibly be the problem with that? Bizayon. Bizayon. What? The bizayon to what?
To the old talis.
To the old talis. Right? So this old talis is a faithful talis, served you for many years, and now you're just going to, you know, you're going to fire it and say, no, now you're not going to, no, you can't anymore. We're taking away your badge of honor and we're transferring it to a younger, newer talis. I mean, that's just, you can't do that. It's a bizayon to the old talis. Right, excellent. I think the Elia Rabba says an explanation like that. The Tosos give a very similar explanation, but they don't talk about it in terms of respect, but they talk about it in terms of rights. right? That every, even inanimate objects, like we saw yesterday, even inanimate objects want to fulfill, right, some purpose in bringing the world closer, right, to the Messianic era. And the way that they can do that is by being used for this, for the fulfillment of mitzvos. What right do you have to deprive the old talis of its opportunity for fulfilling this mitzvah, to be used in fulfillment of this mitzvah? So it's not so much a question of respect for the old talis, say Tosfos, as a talis has a right to keep its tzitzis. Right? Now, if that's the case... Yeah.
It should be the opposite around. Talis becomes worn, you should discard it and put the tzitzis, which is the ikker, on a newer beged, to be mekayim the mitzvah in a better way. The way you're saying it is that the garment is the ikker.
Okay, so what you're saying is closer to what Tosfos in Bamem Adlikin was saying. Bamem Adlikin. Right, so this is a Tosfos in Shabbos. There are two parallel Tosfos. One of them is here in Menachos, one of them is in Shabbos. They give each one a slightly different perspective on the sugya. And what you're saying is a Tosfos in Bamem Adlikin. So let me just contrast for a second the two ways that Tosfos approach this sugya. Tosfos in Menachos say that the problem is that the beged has a right to be used for a mitzvah, and you don't have a right to deprive this beged of its mitzvah. Tosfos bring a parallel. There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia that says that if a person is moving out of his house, and he knows that another Jewish tenant or another Jewish homeowner is going to move into his house, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to take your mezuzos with you. You've got to buy a new set of mezuzos for the new apartment. So Tosfos in Menachos explain that the logic is the same, is that the house, right, almost has a right to its mezuzos. You don't know whether the new tenant is going to have mezuzos or he's not going to have mezuzos. You can't deprive the house, you can't even run the risk, right, of taking away the house's right to fill the mitzvah of mezuzah, so you've got to leave the mezuzahs on the house.
In other words, Rabbi, you're saying you never can replace the mezuzah in your own house.
You are allowed to replace if you need to. It's not possible.
No, so this happens, especially like in places where there's a very high turnover, right? Washington Heights. Person's moving out of their initial studio or one bedroom apartment, and they're moving into a two bedroom apartment. So are they allowed to take their six or seven mezuzos with them, or do they have to leave those mezuzos and come back? So sometimes you don't know who the next tenant is going to be, whether the next tenant will be Jewish, whether the next tenant will not be Jewish, and then in order to spare the mezuzos from the potential bizayon of being discarded or painted over or something like that by a non-Jewish tenant, certainly the mezuzos should be taken along with you. But let's say it's already arranged. You know that your next-door neighbor, the one who got married 5 years after you, is going to be moving into your old apartment. And so you know that it's going to be occupied by a Jewish tenant. Are you allowed to take those mezuzos, or are you not allowed to take those mezuzos?
For example, when they left, they took the mezuzos.
Oh, okay. Because, who knows what's going to happen to them afterwards. Mm-hmm.
Depends, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So they're moving out from an apartment that has non-Jewish people and moving in, and they take them with them in order to save them, then they may not need yours. So it depends.
Right, so if they're taking their old mezuzos, they point out based on Tosfos, right? Tosfos says the house has a right, right, to fulfill the mitzvah of mezuzah. So if you know that the new tenant is bringing mezuzahs with them, kosher mezuzahs, sufficient number of mezuzahs, so then, once again, you're not even going to run into the problem that's raised by Tosfos in Menachos. Right? But Tosfos in Maseches Shabbos gives a very different resolution. He says, yes, there is a contradiction. On the one hand, we say you're not allowed to remove a mezuzah from the door of a house. On the other hand, we say you are allowed to remove the tzitzis from the old garment. What's the resolution? So Tosfos gives a very novel answer. He says, to take a mezuzah off of a door and to leave it, right, on a shelf, that's a problem. To take tzitzis off of a garment and to leave them in a bag, right, on a closet, so that's a problem. But to take tzitzis off of a garment and immediately put them into another garment, that's okay. Why? Because the tzitzis are our main focus here. It would not be right to deprive the strings right, of the opportunity to be worn in fulfillment of the mitzvah. So that would be a problem. To deprive the strings of their opportunity to be worn would be a problem. Take it off the garment, put it onto a shelf, put it into a drawer. No, no, no. But if you know that you're going to be putting the strings immediately onto a new garment, even though the old garment's not going to have strings, not the garment that we care about, it's the strings. And so therefore, Tosfos will say, that will be permissible, and by the same token, it's not the house that we care about, it's the mezuzah. To take a mezuzah off of a door, right, and just to leave it on a shelf, that would be a problem. But, say Tosfos, to take a mezuzah off of one door, and to immediately put it onto another door, that is not going to be a problem. And so that's the perspective of Tosfos and Shabbos. We don't care about the garment and the house, right, what we care about is the strings and the mezuzah. So this is the basic logic, and by that logic, we can return to Mr. Amster's question. What's the difference between an old garment, a comatose garment, and a garment which is still healthy? Why is it that a garment which is healthy, right, potentially, you're not allowed to take the tzitzis off of? A garment which is being taken out of commission, so you would be allowed to take the tzitzis off of? And the answer may be that no matter which perspective you take, so you're going to have the following. The garment which is being taken out of commission is not going to be used to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis anymore, no matter what you do with it. The garment is going into garment disposal. And so therefore, right, you're not necessarily depriving it, right, of mitzvah opportunities that it would have had otherwise. The garment is going to go someplace else. It's not going to be worn again.
But and the worn a little bit, there's no holes in it, a little bit worn, that's arpa compost, so how can you say disposable?
Okay, so you're saying, yesterday we learned that there's a machlokes. Is the mitzvah my mitzvah, or is the mitzvah the garment's mitzvah? So you're saying, if the mitzvah is the garment's mitzvah, makes no difference whether I'm planning to wear it anymore, or whether I'm not planning to wear it anymore. The fact is that the garment, every moment that this tzitzis on it, is fulfilling its mitzvah. So even if I'm not planning to wear it anymore, what right do I have to deprive it of its mitzvah?
If you're wearing it,
the garment is no longer obligated once I cease to plan on wearing it. That's what Mr. Schwartz is saying. That it's no, that the only time that the garment has a mitzvah is as long as I plan to keep on wearing it. Once I no longer plan to keep on wearing it, it doesn't have a mitzvah. And you can even bring a raya from something else that we saw yesterday. No, I'll bring the raya for you. It says that if you're manufacturing tachvichin, person is making burial shrouds, you do not need to put tzitzis onto them, right? Because it's not asher techaseba. It's not made for the classical purposes which garments are made for. And so one can argue that once the owner has decided that he's no longer going to be using this garment for its classical purpose, it's not that, okay, so now the garment is not going to be worn anymore. The garment loses, right, loses its status as being obligated. It's no longer obligated once I no longer plan to use it for wearing. And once it's no longer obligated, so I'm not depriving it of anything by taking its tzitzis away. Yeah, it got worn out, right? Navol tibol, that's what Yisro says to Moshe. So literally, right, it means that you're going to become a shmata if you stand there from morning until evening, right, judging the people. Navol tibol, the same beit lamed, balai, right, balaot, right? It's all to be worn out, to become a shmata, but there's different ranges about worn out. Moshe Rabbeinu was not going to transform, right, into a shmata, but it meant in a figurative sense that he's going to get worn out. And over here as well, it doesn't have to mean literally that it becomes a type of rag that you put on the bottom of a map. It means that it becomes worn out, so you're no longer going to wear it anymore. Hidur mitzvah, there's a lot of interesting things to say about hidur mitzvah. You could view it, right, as a way of giving kavod to the mitzvah. I'm not sure that it's exactly the same thing. Kavod, you know, kavod v'hadar, right, are two separate things. We do talk in other instances about, like, kavod Shabbos, right? So kavod Shabbos, you wear nice clothing for Shabbos, and you prepare nice foods for Shabbos. That's the mitzvah of kavod Shabbos. And then to hiddur mitzvah, I'm not sure whether wearing nice clothing is hiddur mitzvah of Shabbos or kavod, right? But there definitely is, right, as you're pointing out, the analogous concept that you want to avoid bizayon for the mitzvah, and instead you want to give a kavod to the mitzvah. But in terms of hiddur, I'm not sure whether the particular technical term hiddur is the right term to connote the opposite of this. Yes. You can take off the tzitzis, yes.
And do whatever you want.
Well, we paskin that you're allowed to take off tzitzis even from a healthy garment, as long as you're going to put them onto a new garment, consistent with Tosfos in Masechta Shabbos. That you're allowed to transplant it from one garment to another one, but if the garment is old and you're not going to use it anymore, so then you can even take off the tzitzis and put it on and put it onto your shelf. So that's why, actually, the minog is, as Mr. Tannenbaum pointed out yesterday, that the Chevra Kadisha will bury people in talisos, but they will cut off one set of strings from the talis, right, prior to wrapping it, to wrapping the body in the talis. And what about the problem? All the problems, bizayon, right? What about the problem of depriving the garment or the strings of their opportunity? So again, the answer becomes that in this instance, because the garment ceases to be an obligated garment, you at least, right, don't have a problem with the derech eretz for the garment, or with the depriving it of its opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah. In terms of the last issue, which is the strings, so that may be a little bit harder to understand. I have to consider still why it's not considered depriving the strings of their opportunity. Maybe you should unsew the strings and use them someplace else. So that's a little bit harder. It's a little bit harder to know.
Once you take off the strings from the not so nice anymore garment, or from the fading garment, what becomes of the beged itself then?
So the beged cannot be worn because it doesn't have the arba kanfos, but because you weren't planning to wear it anyhow, so you dispose of the beged. Now, how does one dispose of the beged? We'll hopefully deal with in another 7-8 minutes.
Could it be used for something else, or can't?
The beged, so the answer is, strictly speaking, yes. But however, in terms of, there may be, like, there's no halakha not to, but it may not be derech eretz, right, to use it for something else. If you could look in how exactly people used worn out garments back, you know, in the olden days before toilet paper was invented, and so, you know, that's the type of thing which the poskim say that even if it's strictly permitted, it certainly is not derech eretz, or perhaps, you know, kavod, right, for the mitzvah to use the beged for something, right, which is a little bit disgraceful. What about using it as a handkerchief even nowadays? So that you can argue, you know, both ways, and hopefully we'll see some of the sources, right, in a couple of minutes. What about using it to clean your eyeglasses? Well, it could be that even while the tzitzis are on it, you might be allowed to use it to clean your eyeglasses. So again, this is all we'll hopefully deal with in the second shiur today. I think that Rebbe Yashiv has the tshuva where he says that it's okay, and he says that the reason is because we see that people, you know, will use their ties, right, to clean their eyeglasses, and so obviously it's not considered undignified, because if it were, then no one would use a nice silk tie to clean their eyeglasses. Now it happens to be that I do not use my tie to clean my eyeglasses because I'm worried that that the tie is going to get ripped, and so I try also not to use my talus or my tzitzis to clean the eyeglasses, right? Because if I'm not going to use my tie for it, I'm not going to use the talus for it either. But those who would use their tie, so it's very, very reasonable to say that it's okay, because it's considered to be a perfectly respectable thing for a beged to do, to clean one's eyeglasses. Yeah, okay, so this is all for the second shiur today. This is all for the second shiur today. Right now, we want to just finish up a little bit more about tzitzis transplants, and pretty much the next couple of lines, we'll be able to go through them very quickly, because either the concepts we are already familiar with, or because they don't pertain to tzitzis, and so I'm going to take the liberty of glossing over them. So let's take a look over here what's happening. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanon, that this is a concept that we should be familiar with already, because we analyzed it in depth about a month ago. Tanu Rabbanon, a brisa, teaches us, talis shakula tchilas. Let's say that you've got an all blue talis, right? Call to mind, right? Alvin's multicolor talis, except that imagine one that was entirely colored blue. So the halacha is kol minatziv onin potrin ba. No matter what color the strings that you put on, aside from the one or two or four tchilas strings, the other four or six or seven strings can be any color. The strings can be purple, they can be red, they can be green, they can be yellow, they can be fuchsia, they can be any color that you want. They don't have to be white. If you're wearing an all blue talis, so the other strings, the strings that ordinarily would be white, can be any color. Culminative onin potrin, but all different species of colors will exempt this talis from its obligation, chutz mikla ilon, with the exception of a faux techeles of kla ilon. That was the name of the dye, which was blue. It looked exactly like techeles. That will not be kosher, Rashi says, because we're worried that people are going to think that it is genuine techeles. And then they'll use it, right? They'll say, oh, this is a blue talis with four blue strings. Probably all four strings are tcheles. And I'm going to untie it from this baguette. And I'll use it as tcheles on a different baguette. They won't realize that it's not genuine tcheles. And they may even run afoul then of the prohibition of kelayim.
Could it be assumed nowadays that the blue strings really are tcheles?
I don't have the answer for that yet.
Okay.
I don't have the answer for that yet. I have to read. I was hoping that I would actually have time to address that, right, over the 9 weeks that we have together, but it's looking like there's so much more, right, in tzitzis than a number of people have observed to me, that there's so much more in Hilchos Tzitzis than they would have ever expected. But I have to tell you that I share the sentiment, right? There's a lot more here that I've discovered than I expected to discover. And so some of the topics I promised at the beginning, all the questions will be answered, right, by the end of the 9 weeks. Now I'm beginning to realize not all the questions will be answered by the end of the 9 weeks. We need a couple more weeks if we're really going to answer all of them. Yeah, so the Braisa says that you cannot use, right, faux techeles on an all blue talis, but you can use strings of any other color for those seven, six, or four white strings. And the Gemara says, Mesve, I'll challenge that from a different Braisa. The Braisa says, talis, ein poter ba elamuna. A talis, you need to have strings which are the same material or the same color, right, as a talis, right? Alvin's multicolored talis was mostly white, right? And therefore, the strings should be white. They're the min, they're the same species of color, if you will, right, as the talis was. What about talis shakula tcheles? If it's all blue, so then maybe tcheles, you should bring the one or two or four strings of tcheles, and davar acher, and something else, whether that something else is white, whether that something else is green, whether that something else is yellow, makes no difference. You're not able to bring kla'ilon, right? Kla'ilon lo yavi, you shouldn't bring this faux tcheles, even though that's the color that best matches the garment, right? Because if you brought it, again, there's a concern that people may think that it's genuine tcheles. So therefore, that's a problem. But imhevi b'di'evit, if you brought it, it's going to be kosher. So the first braisa says that everything works except for kla'ilon. And this braisa says that b'di'evit, even kla'ilon works. So how do you resolve the contradiction? One braisa says that kla'ilon does not work b'di'evit. One braisa says that kla'ilon does work b'di'evit. And to that the Gemara answers, Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchak lo kasha, kan b'talis bas arba chutin, if the talis has the minimum number of strings, so then you're allowed to put faux tcheles as 2, 4, whatever, 6, 7 of those strings, because there's no concern that someone's going to take just, you know, two of these strings and use it as tcheles on another talis, right? But kan b'talis bas shmona chutin, if the talis has 8 strings, so then it could be a problem, because you might end up taking the extra strings, right? You have two, you've got extra strings on this talis. You don't have enough strings to, you know, to put onto your new talis. So you'll take off from this one and you'll put it onto that one. You won't realize that these are only faux techeles and that they are not genuine techeles. So Rav Nachman's solution is that when there's no concern, right, that you'll use these faux techeles strings in replacement of techeles, so then it's permissible to use them, right, and perhaps even ideal to use them. However, if there is a concern that you'll use them in exchange for techeles in place of techeles, so then there would be a potential problem by talis bas shmoneh chutin. And again, once again, the Gemara is going to bring everything back right? Shma Minah says the Gemara that Matirin mi beged the beged. This whole concern is only applicable if it's permissible to untie from one beged and to retie on another beged. Because if there's no heter to do that, so then what you end up with is that even if you have eight strings, you've got lots of extra strings in one particular set, you're not allowed to untie them and retie them someplace else. So why are you worried that someone may think that it's treles, right? And then they'll untie from this beged, put it onto another beged, that will be in violation of halacha. Why are you concerned about that? And again, the Gemara's answer is no. Right, Dilma de'i avar. Right, we can't trust that everyone is familiar with all the halachos. The instructions for assembly of tzitzis need to be foolproof and fail-safe. They need to be able to address people of all different IQs, in all different cultures, everything all over the place. And therefore, the Gemara says that even though it's forbidden, we still have to be worried that people won't realize that it's forbidden, and therefore the legislation against using faux treles takes into account the fact that tzitzis may, in some circumstances, fall into the hands of those who are ignorant of halacha. So we'll stop here, and Be'ezus Hashem, we'll pick up tomorrow.